Web Guy, the Commonwealth Games have been held on the Gold Coast and it's been a gold rush for Australia. Plenty of medals to the point, Tim, where I feel like I'm not getting the enjoyment I should out of every Australian success.
It's a bit earlier in the week as we talk now. What's the leaderboard looking like? I haven't even seen one. Do they do one?
We've had about 60, I don't know if it's 60 medals or 60, yeah, 60 medals, around 25 gold medals.
Jeepers. So
around the midway point of the games.
So are we top?
We are top, only marginally in front of England, but and then it's daylight between the rest of the field.
Com Games is not as much about, you know, like winning or the medal tally as much as the Olympics, though, is it? It feels like it's a bit more, you know, a bit more community spirit sort of or something different.
Yeah, it is. And we get to see a lot of the countries that perhaps don't get much of a focus in sport normally. A lot of the teams struggle against the big giants like Australia. I saw a beach volleyball team where Papua New Guinea just didn't stack up against the Aussie pair. But I'm guessing there's not a lot of beach courts there.
Somewhere. No. I have not watched any Com Games. You gave me a quick wrap up, and the way you described it, it made me wish I had been watching it more. The volleyball team you speak about, it sounds like just rank amateurs.
Oh, I think that's that's how I painted the picture. It just Australia would knock down a few serves, and they found it hard to get a couple of them back. And you don't often see that in top level beach volleyball, where a side is skewing the ball in all sorts of directions. That reminds me of when I used to play at the Morphett Vale ICA Centre. There were a lot of flying balls in all directions, but not at the top level. But anyway, the great thing about the Commonwealth Games, as you said, there are a lot of side stories, and some of the celebrations for unexpected gold has been amazing and unexpected results. And one that we've both had a look at is the celebration from veteran PNG weightlifter Dika Tower. I think that's how you'd say his name.
Really? Because I would have said Dika Tour.
Tour, sorry.
Dika.
Dika Tour.
So he's with Dika, I noticed.
Oh, it's, you know, Dika Stella. Yeah. I was getting in. So you say it.
I know.
Dika Tour.
Dika Tour.
But he wasn't a dick in his celebrations. He was pure joy. He's in the 62 kilogram class.
Yep.
And got up there, had a successful lift, and then just went bunter. Took off the, what would you call that? Restraining belt?
The belt.
That keeps their back in place.
It's more than just a belt, isn't it?
It's not a flimsy little thing. I've seen these things close up. You see them in gyms where people wear it to give their back support.
Can I jump in here?
Yeah.
He took it off. Yes. He won the medal. He won gold. He took off this belt contraption. Was giving it the windmill treatment, spinning it around in his arm. He should have been arrested. What he was doing was a threat to the safety of everyone in that auditorium. He flung it into the crowd after that. And I'm surprised that someone wasn't lacerated across the throat or, you know, maybe even completely decapitated. This is like one of the strongest men in the world. And he just lashed his weighty belt out into the direction of, you know, some unsuspecting spectator.
If that event occurred and someone in the crowd didn't say, "Ooh, that could have taken your eye out," I'd be very surprised, because that was dangerous. It was joyous but dangerous.
Yeah, both at the same time. And the other thing he did was he was just like on the warpath, hunting down anyone he could find that was from his team, you know, support staff, coaches, whoever they are, and just like grabbing them and lifting them up. As if he had to prove that, you know, he was a strong guy who can lift up things. He's just won a Com Games gold medal. But anyway, he's still proving himself. Everyone he can get his hands on, he's lifting up. And it's almost like, what's an animal, like a big animal, and they just get so enthusiastic with the little animal they're playing with. They do damage, you know.
Yeah, it could be like a mother lion sort of pouring its cubs.
Yeah.
It was that easy.
I thought he was going to get so overexcited, he was going to crush one of his poor, you know, staff.
Now, from the vision that you didn't see, they then showed the medal presentation, and obviously he's pretty pleased with that. He gave a big warm hug to the second place competitor and the bronze medalist as well, which was lovely.
Yeah.
And then once that was finished and the national anthem had been played, he did a bit of a jig around the dais as well. So there's not enough of that sort of celebrations, just pure excitement about winning and taking pride in doing something for your country.
I could be wrong, but I feel like the overwhelming world impression of people from Papua New Guinea is that they're happy. Don't you? Is that what do you think of when you think of someone from Papua New Guinea?
I'm always thinking of coups. Stern people.
Then no, it's no doubt it can be a dangerous place, but the people have a reputation of being like pretty happy.
Exactly.
And this guy's done his country proud in every way.
In a contrasting, same event, but contrasting emotions, the Canadian opponent that was runner-up was equally impressive with his emotions.
Oh, yeah.
So they showed the celebrations and then they cut away to him.
Yeah.
And he's kicking gear in the background. Yeah. Now, if he'd stuffed up the performance himself, you could kind of understand this meltdown.
Yeah.
But he's lost it because of someone else doing better than him.
I like that observation. That's a brilliant observation. He is irate because he just wasn't good enough. I guess he's really beating himself up. He's been clearly shown to not measure up to this other guy. He's done all he can. It wasn't good enough. And he's just angry about it. But on the, side note, how about the TV directing, just as he spoke it? Like, the director of that, event, he's got the bank of screens. He's seeing the PNG guy just going off his head with happiness. On these other monitors, all of a sudden he's seeing, oh, my God, the loser. The loser is actually kicking his own equipment.
Yes, well
cut,
done.
Cut, 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 whatever the signal is. He would just be thinking, or she would just be thinking, this is just panning out for me like a treat.
Tim, let's face it, it's probably not in the spirit of the games to act like that. But for me, refreshing. Too many dignified losers in sport. I want to see someone spit it, and he did.
Yeah,
he did.
That's why everyone loved John McEnroe. Maybe. I don't know why exactly, but you just knew that he was, whatever emotion he was feeling, he was going to express. Good to see.
The other event that grabbed a few highlights was the sort of David and Goliath battle in netball between Malawi and New Zealand. Of course, the New Zealand side are the dominant force in netball, along with the Australian Diamonds.
Mm.
And Malawi knocked them off I think it was a pool game, so you'd expect the Kiwis will probably end up in the final with the Aussies at some stage down the track, or after this podcast goes
out. Yeah, true. Would have liked to know what the odds were. Malawi getting a... almost feel like that's... Is that the equivalent of, like Papua New Guinea beating the All Blacks? Or even Australia beating the All Blacks? Anybody beating the All Blacks?
Possibly. We did speak to a netball expert, though, before coming on air, and she said, well, they're not an easy beat. They're in the probably top six or seven side, so it's still an achievement, and they reflected that after the game, didn't they?
They had the best celebration I've ever seen anywhere at anything, full stop. just spontaneous happiness to start with, but then at a certain point they kind of regrouped, got together, and went through what certainly appeared to be a rehearsed victory jig, I would call it.
Included
which included the coach.
Possibly the assistant coach. Can you describe it? I can't quite. So one coach has got his foot in the air and another coach decides that looks like a good leverage point for a dance move.
Basically, the assistant coach or whoever he was, his contribution consisted solely of holding the other coach's foot. Well, he danced. So I don't know. When they do that breakdancing stuff, and a breakdancer will hold their own ankle up in the air and while as like a move.
Mm.
It was like that, but it was like the coach was too good to hold his own ankle. He had like a minion doing it for him. I'd funny stuff.
And of course, there was the Australian walker. Is it Dane Bird Smith? I think it is.
Yes.
Apologies if I've got that wrong. But he did a little bird mime as he crossed the line.
Oh.
Also great TV of watching him walk through the streets of Gold Coast talking to the reporter, but also high-fiving fans that had supported him along the way. So that was great.
Quick wild tangent. Have you ever noticed the Adelaide Crows football team, like the weird goal celebrations they do? Like they have customised high-five variations.
Ooh.
Between the play. Tex Walker,
more closely,
Tex Walker, Eddie Betts, I think are the two main ones. And to different people, they have like these different combos And I don't know, like, does this come from the NBA maybe or something? But I just can't help but feel at some point they've practiced this. And as cool as it might look out on the field, that practice moment, that's, you know,
yeah, when are awkward. They doing it? And
what should they do?
It does suggest there's a little bit too much time on their yes. hands when you're practicing the celebrations. Yep. But, mm-hmm. yeah, they're the fun parts of sport. And if you're not really into the sport of Commonwealth Games, make sure you tune into some of the fun highlights of winners and losers.
Or just listen to us and we'll let you know the funny stuff that happens. I know for a fact, Newsman, The Simpsons, one of your most favourite shows of all time.
Indeed.
The number one favourite?
I'd say over the journey of my TV watching career, yes it is. I don't watch it much these days, but it has been a staple part of my TV viewing.
What an illustrious career your TV watching career has been as well. Online, you get a sense for TV shows, for personalities, even products. There's a prevailing online opinion about all these things. And the prevailing online opinion of The Simpsons has always been really sky high. Recently, in the last couple of years, they've got this reputation for predicting the future. Like, mm-hmm. I think they, you know, talked to, there was a President Trump in an episode ages ago.
That's right.
And all these, so once they start looking for them, all these things are popping up where Simpsons have, you know, preempted real life way ahead of time.
And just generally cutting into social observation and making some really telling takes on how society is.
Yep. Such an old show now as well. I think it's 28 years or, you know, it's getting up to almost 30 years. That is huge. So when you think of how the show has changed as well, because originally it was like a... It was, you know, like every parent's worst nightmare. Don't let your kids watch this show. It's going to ruin them. And it's evolved so much that now there's way more controversial shows. But, you know, still always a really respected thing, pretty much. Until this week, they're in the news for all the wrong reasons.
So someone's bringing down The Simpsons. I don't like the sound of this, but what's going on?
It's been a building controversy for a while that their character Apu, Indian American convenience store owner, famous character in the show, building up over a period of time, thought that he's not really appropriate anymore. You know, it was the early 90s, maybe even the late 80s when a lot of these characters were conceived.
So basically, Apu, as you said, convenience store, quickie mark owner, mm-hmm. works pretty much, they give you the perception he works 24/7.
Yeah.
He's got a
lot of kids.
A lot of kids. Yeah. An Indian wife, went through a traditional Indian wedding, but
yep.
enjoys the spoils of American culture without giving up his own Indianness.
Yes. But thinking lately has been, it's just, I think one of the big sticking points is that it is a white American man, Hank Azaria, mm-hmm. who does the voice.
It's a very stereotypical Indian accent.
Yep. There was a documentary released about by this American guy whose heritage I don't know. I'm not clear on it, but he might have American Indian heritage, I think. He did a documentary about why he doesn't like Apu. And in it, it featured, I guess it's old video footage of the voice actor saying that when he went for the job, they asked him to do the most offensive Indian accent he could manage.
Right, okay.
That's kind of what they stipulated. And he, so he basically, you know, delivered. So, you know, you can't have white actors dressing up as black characters. Mm-hmm. So maybe you shouldn't have white actors doing voices of Indian characters. Anyway, so that's been building. Not sure whether that's right. Finally, this week, The Simpsons aired an episode.
Yes.
With their first ever, you know, nod or acknowledgement to this building controversy. And it seems like not everyone really loved it. Basically, what happened was, I'll quickly outline the scene for you. Lisa and Marge reading an updated version of the Princess in the Garden fairy tale. It's been changed to make it acceptable for 2018. At one point, Lisa looks straight at the camera and says, "Something that started decades ago and was applauded and inoffensive is now politically incorrect. What can you do?" Lisa then looks at a picture of Apu with a catchphrase, "Don't have a cow," written on it. Marge says, "Some things will be dealt with at a later date." Lisa responds, "If at all." So I guess that's the show producers saying, yes, we know there's something, there's this controversy.
Having a look at the clip, it wasn't really cleverly weaved into the storyline as such. I don't think so. Anyway, what do you reckon? It was pretty obvious, you know, they're just saying, this is our response.
Yeah, I think it had to be obvious, probably. You wouldn't want it to be missed. But a lot... initial reaction seems to be from people that maybe that was a bit casual, bit of a casual response. The guy who made that documentary that I spoke about, which kickstarted a lot of the, you know, talk about is it all right, he said that he wrote, "Politically incorrect? ? That's the takeaway from my movie and the discussion it sparked. Man, I really love this show. This is sad." I've got to admit, just watching a couple of grabs from his documentary, he speaks to a lot of, it's not just about Indian, it's sort of like minority groups trying to make their way in the entertainment business. He does speak to a few Indian actors, though, and the stories coming through about them having to go into auditions and being asked to do fairly, you know, like demeaning kind of versions of Indian characters. It does build up a bit of a picture of, you know, like there's a bit of, you know, there's something that's not great here. And if they say, if an Indian American says he thinks it's offensive, is that enough? Or do we need to somehow, you know, verify that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. When you first pitched this story to me, Tim, my first instinct was, leave Apu alone.
Yeah.
He's a hardworking American that happens to be Indian.
Yeah.
And we get that he's both Indian and American. But if it's causing offence, maybe it is a bit of a dated kind of character.
The other thing is it's a cartoon, and not just The Simpsons, but cartoons really generally, and certainly The Simpsons, run on stereotypes.
Mm. Well, we mentioned some before we came on air. There's the comic book guy who's overweight, not too good with the ladies.
Yep.
And
there's the Italian chef.
Yes.
Has a thick Italian accent and just seems to spend his whole life making spaghetti.
Is a scientist with coke-bottled glasses that doesn't seem to have a good grasp on society.
Yep.
Bumblebee man.
Yep. There's even like the lower socioeconomic kid at the school, Nelson, who, you know, his family is not doing too well. They basically pick on everyone.
Yes.
They do make fun of everyone. But maybe... you know, in comedy, they talk about punching up. Like, you make jokes about people who are in who have power. You don't make jokes about, you know, people who are struggling or fighting to make their way, which, you know, minority groups perhaps
apart from the entertainment industry, from what this documentary seems to touch on, I mean, are Indians persecuted in America? Or are they regularly disadvantaged, can't get jobs? I don't really know the background of... are they getting a rough deal in America?
I don't know so much about that. The guy that made the documentary, he's got like a round table of other Indian American people, and they're all sort of talking. He's asking them, like, who here has, you know, been, you know, joked about with reference to the Apu character?
Okay.
And, you know, everyone had. Right. They had all put their hands out. They've all been called Apu. You know, they've all copped the jokes about working at a quickie mart, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know about, like, getting jobs and stuff, but just, you know... that is going to be relentless at a point. And, you know, yeah. So seeing it from that personal point of view, I can sort of see how, you know, that's not
could
that
The
funny.
Simpsons introduce a Indian character along with Apu, so separate to Apu, that's just a normal everyday Joe, just hanging out at Moe's and having a drink and maybe becomes Homer's boss or...
Well, you know, you said that and I was thinking, what would be a fun thing to do? What if Mr. Burns, like, messed up his career and, you know, they just did a character swap where Mr. Burns has to run the quickie mart forever now and Apu is running the nuclear power plant.
Yeah, plenty of ways to move the characters forward and perhaps appease some of the disappointment this guy has with the show. But yeah, I'm open to always learning from The Simpsons and cartoons and making myself a better person.
Yes, and the world a better place. Newsman, we'll see how this goes. If it doesn't work out well, no one will know because we won't even put it in our podcast. It will hit the cutting room floor, as they say.
We're doing a challenge that is often very difficult in radio terms, and I guess exactly the same for podcasts.
Yeah. Last week, this story went viral, and this is why I caught my eye, because I just like the story. It's a bit of a, maybe it's self-indulgent to do this, but anyway. The New Yorker magazine, a fancy publication, obviously based in New York, I assume.
misleading name otherwise.
But. Yeah. It's famous for its cartoons. Famous in some ways because they're notoriously bad. They're not, yeah. The whole publication is a bit of a, you know, upmarket, you know, possibly pretentious, maybe snooty kind of, you know, elite kind of magazine. The cartoons are funny little pictures with notoriously, you know, strange captions. The idea with some of these is that the captions are almost, could almost just be randomly generated.
Are you aware that there was a Seinfeld episode that featured...
No?
Yeah, basically, Elaine was, yeah, basically saying they're too obscure. I don't even know what this means. And she confronted the editor.
Yeah.
And he had no idea
what it was. Okay. Yeah, well, I have seen this story where they take the cartoons, randomly generate a caption, and, you know, it's just as funny, maybe even funnier than what is published. Anyway, like them or love them, the cartoons are kind of, you know... known. Every edition the magazine publishes a cartoon with no caption. Readers can send in their own, you know, clever captions.
That's fun. I like that.
That is fun. Turns out that this story went viral last week. A 9-year-old girl has been writing her own captions, and the internet pretty much agreed that she is destroying the competition. The 9-year-old's captions far, far better than anyone else's. And primarily, I think, because she is not overthinking it.
Exactly. Exactly what
you see, yes, we both agree on this. The problem with the cartoon caption is it's usually way, way overthought and complex and ridiculous and hence never funny.
Well, as you said, it's the reputation, the highbrow reputation that makes people overthink it. They think, I need to really appeal to a higher intelligentsia.
Yeah, it has to be. You even use the word intelligentsia, and that's it.
It's in the wrong reference as well.
But. It's got to be sophisticated. It's got to be sophisticated. It's got to be witty, and that's the problem. Like I'd take funny over witty any day. What we're going to do now is run through these cartoons that the 9-year-old has geniusly captioned. See if we can better them.
We've got Facebook, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we should pop these on there.
Yes. We can finally use our Facebook page.
Our first attempt at being interactive.
All right. So I'll just quickly, briefly describe the cartoon. And then what? Then do you want to give your caption or shall I give mine? Or shall I give the girl?
Give the girls first, I'd say.
Okay. All right. So first caption, you know when you meet a prisoner, you can talk on the phone, opposite sides of the glass. A woman is doing a jail call with someone on the other side of glass.
You see it on the movies all the time.
Yeah. That's famous setup. But the prisoner is like a chef with a big, tall chef's hat. The 9-year-old's just dazzling caption is... I told you to give the mayor a pizza.
Good.
Yeah, brilliant. She's just, you know, and this is the thing with her. She's just written what she's seen. But, you know, so I probably would have, if I had to go with these, and this is torture.
I think we're going to double up on this one.
I would have gone with, I can't believe they let you keep the hat.
Mine was, when I told you, I wanted you to cook food to die for. This isn't what I meant.
Yours are going to be very pun related.
Yes.
All right, we'll do it quick in case this is not good listening. Yeah. Anyway, a couple walking into a subway, like a literal underground train system.
Yes.
On the tracks, though, is a big giant subway sandwich. The 9-year-old caption has written, "Well, that's new." Classic.
Yeah. I was going with the subway smells different today.
Yeah. I was thinking I would have done like, well, that's different. But I think I just subconsciously was copying what the 9-year-old did. Okay. I don't have a good one for that. Next one. Two pigeons on top of a roof, city roof, and one of them is wearing like bat wings.
Ah, is that what it was?
Yeah, something like that.
Because I drew blank on this one, but I'll try work after I've heard yours and hers.
She has written, "You okay there, buddy?" Question mark. I think I would have gone with something like, "Here's the helpline number."
Ah, that's good.
Yeah,
I couldn't come up with one immediately. I've only had a quick look at all of them, but I was thinking something like, what do you call fear of heights?
That is a great question.
I don't know, but something about it's a tough life for a pigeon with a fear of heights. Because I thought the wings were like, oh, I'm almost losing balance.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Heightophobia.
Yeah. Anyway, move on.
Aeroplane flying through the air, two pilots, and out the window, standing on a cloud, is a guy giving a thumbs up.
Yeah. No, I couldn't get one for this one.
The 9-year-old wrote, "The air is good out here."
Right.
I like it.
Okay. You didn't have one for that one?
Nah, I'm wishing I had looked at these a bit closer. A gingerbread man in a hospital bed surrounded by doctors.
Yes.
9-year-old caption, "Looks like you have a case of the gumdrops."
Yes. So, I went with puns again for this one.
Yeah.
So it's a doctor with another student doctors.
Yeah, right, yep.
The patient before us fell gingerly.
I think I would have gone with, "Don't just stand there." And I guess that's why I don't write captions for the New Yorker. Okay. Caveman drawing a picture on a cave wall, and behind him is like a woolly mammoth. The 9-year-old has written, "Do you want to play tic-tac-toe?"
Yeah, that's right.
Sure.
It's better than what I came up with.
Sure. What did you have?
Pet portraits are not a new phenomenon.
Yeah, I know where you're going. That's good.
It looks like the elephant belongs to the caveman.
Yeah. Borrowing from yours, I would have gone with first pet selfie or something.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Before Facebook or something.
Yeah, pre-Facebook.
Pet lovers before Facebook or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We could have won this.
Gold. How about this? A hiker hiking up, like, it looks like the Himalayas. He finally gets to the top of the mountain and there's, like, fine dining, a couple of restaurant tables, people eating a meal, and then like a guru sitting cross-legged right on the edge, which the guy's looking at as he reaches the top. 9-year-old says, "Table for two, please."
Did you come up with one for this?
No, I don't have one for this.
I came up with, "Come for the steak, stay for the enlightenment."
That might be your best yet.
Yeah, I think so.
I like it. What's this one? A big long business table, one guy right at the end, one other guy right at the other end.
Oh, I didn't look at that one. I missed these ones.
All right, we'll do it on the fly. The 9-year-old caption is, "Why are we the only people at the meeting?" I mean, it's so true. Why are they the only? Okay, so the thing with the New Yorker cartoons is they're not laugh out loud funny.
No.
You know, it's that subtle humor. Let's skip to the next one. Guy at a bar. I like this one. He's holding a cigarette, a bit of smoke wafting off the top of his cigarette. He's got a coffee cup next to him, and there's like a duck head sticking out the top of his coffee cup.
Oh, can I have a look at that one? I think I missed this page. Sorry. And what's she written? OMG, everything is going wrong.
I like that. Yeah. That's good. Everything is going wrong when you've got like a duck in your cup of coffee.
That's it. I've so she's beating me because I've gone blank on that one.
Yeah, I would have just borrowed one of her earlier ones and put the caption on this. You right there, buddy?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do this last one. This is my absolute favorite. She has just knocked this out of the park. There's a...
that one could have been cup of soup, now in duck flavor. I should have just stayed quiet.
Don't worry, we'll edit that out. Okay, a mum and a kid are in an electronics store and they're going shopping and there's all TVs and people browsing in the background. The sales assistant is helping them and he is holding a remote control, TV remote, that is the size of him. It is enormous.
Yeah, it's huge.
And you couldn't, I defy anyone to come up with a better caption than this. The 9-year-old has written, "If you want a remote, get this one." It's gold. Of course, get the one that's the size of a fridge. Like, here it is.
I was going to say, you should see the size of the TV. But hers definitely wins that one.
Yeah, I like the thing. So, I don't know. Takeaway from this is, if you are trying to write a funny caption, and people always are on Facebook and blah, blah, funny little one-liners, keep it simple. I don't know. Just what has she done? Just write what you see. Write the first thing that comes into your mind.
I think there's a bit of hit and miss with hers, but I reckon I reckon 7 out of 10 are winners.
Yeah, and that's a strike rate I'd take.
And that's way better than us.